Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. I want to say a few words this week about the possibility that all the so-called experts on the Middle East may require shock therapy to enable them to recover from the presentation of the Trump plan for lowering the temperature in a Middle East boiling pot. Keep in mind that the Trump plan is not a solution to the problems of the Middle East, because there is no solution for the foreseeable future. It was famously said by H.L. Mencken that every problem has a solution which is reasonable, sensible, and wrong. Solutions have been proposed for about 70 years, and the only result has been that a lot of so-called experts have used the Israel-Palestinian problem to write books, to make speeches, and make a lot of money. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been the goose that lays the golden egg, but has not advanced the cause of peace even one inch. This is unfortunate, but it is true. The difficulty that much of the world is having in digesting Donald Trump's Middle East peace initiative stems from two things. I'll be back after the break.
Biblical. Be beautiful. Wear your crown.
Repping is my crown.
Do what married Jewish women have been doing for thousands of years. Celebrate the art of head wrapping. I'm Andrea Grinberg from Rapunzel.com. We have beautiful scarves, stunning accessories, scarves for faith, scarves for healing, and scarves for fun. Rapunzel.com. That's Rapunzel with a W. Or click on our banner on the Israel News Talk Radio homepage.
Rapunzel.com. Beautiful scarves, stunning accessories, paired with tutorials, support, and a vibrant community to give you everything you need to start and perfect your head covering journey.
Don't forget, join the Rapunzel community group on Facebook to see, learn, and share your beautiful wraps. That's Rapunzel with a W on Facebook.
I love Rapunzel.
I love Rapunzel. I love Rapunzel.
Get 10% off your purchase with promo code RADIO. Go now to Rapunzel.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few more things about the President Trump's peace plan. First of all, it is the first plan so far, which will no longer be a source of income for a lot of people. What I mean is the following. There are a lot of peace plans have come from the United States, and they were associated with names like Secretary Kerry or President Clinton. Now, taking Kerry and Clinton as examples, they didn't make a living out of the Middle East problem. They got their salaries for what they were doing. Well, a lot of people, names like Martin Indyk and David Makovsky and Dennis Ross, these are people who have more or less made a living out of the struggle. They write books, they give talks, all kinds of things. So it's been a very interesting source of income, which may possibly come to an end for a lot of people if the Trump plan is indeed implemented. Now, the problem that much of the world is having with the new peace plan is because this initiative essentially departs from what's called internationally agreed parameters for Palestinian statehood, and its acceptance in principle of partial Israeli annexation of Judea and Samaria if and when the Palestinians refuse to negotiate. In other words, in particular, if Trump is elected for another 4 years, then the Trump plan is going to go into effect. It's a four-year plan. So if he's reelected, he'll be around to see that the plan gets implemented. Now, these positions are probably a shock to the international community, which for the past 25 years has pretty much attached to a picture of the Middle East, an end game in which the Palestinian demands are met and Israel is moved down to a smaller country and its national historic claims are not taken into account, and only words are being said about it. It's the need for security. Now, these international boundary lines are articulated in the Clinton parameters, the Kerry outline, the UN, the European Union Council conclusions, all kind of resolutions. The bottom line have been, and all these positions, is that Israel will be forced to accept Palestinian demands, uproots most settlements, withdraw from almost all of the West Bank, and divide Jerusalem to facilitate the rise of a Palestinian state. So this is the way the world has been looking at the problem here. Everybody in the world presumes Israel will be forced to concede, and it is supposedly the only template that can bring Palestinian-Israel peace, the only paradigm that bears international legitimacy. Thus, any moves away from these accepted guidelines are bad. That's what the EU foreign policy chief said last week. And it's interesting because the world has had one way of thinking for at least 25 years, if not longer. The problem is that this concept was never practical from Israel's perspective, become less so with the utter failure of the Oslo peace process because of Palestinian terrorism rejectionism. And there also have been Islamic threats rising against the state of Israel. So what the conventional thinking included was a set of unrealistic Palestinian territorial expectations, and where every Palestinian failure in responsibility and state building is forgiven. Every Palestinian rejection of a reasonable peace offer is explained away, and every Palestinian assault on Israel in international forums is excused. And this indeed has come to an end with President Trump's plan. Unilateral Palestinian steps against Israel are accepted with equanimity all over the world. They wanted to have their statehood unilaterally recognized by the UN without negotiation or compromise. They appealed to the International Criminal Court against Israel and to the International Court of Justice. They try to criminalize and penalize Israel. There's illegal building of Palestinian settlements in areas of the West Bank that are for Israel, and ongoing warfare from Gaza against Israel. And the only reason is no warfare against Israel from the area of the West Bank is because the Israeli army controls what's happening there. And Israel is expected to do nothing in response to all these Palestinian assaults. Israel is supposed to wait patiently for a negotiation with the Palestinians. that the Palestinians don't even want to come to the table. So Israel's held hostage to never-ending Palestinian vetoes up till now. And of course, Israel is not expected to take unilateral action to secure its own national and security assets. So what's happened till now is, it's very simple, if I can sum it up, Israel is expected to hang on for a peaceful and democratic Palestinian political culture to somehow miraculously come into being. This would involve a unified Palestinian government that doesn't pay people to kill Israelis, that disarms Hamas and other terrorist armies in its midst, that ends the teaching of anti-Semitism in its school system, and is prepared to live with next door to a Jewish state. All of this is just not even over the horizon. It's not in the offing, and the Trump administration essentially said, we realize this, and we're taking a wholly fresh look for the Israeli-Palestinian deal for Arab-Israel regional peace. Now, it's true that the Trump plan falls pretty short, well short, of the Palestinian demands. But it does require significant modification of Israeli positions, too. It is a serious and detailed effort. It's something like 180 pages long, I think. You can get it on the internet. It's a detailed effort to answer basic needs of both sides. Israel's security and Israeli rights, Palestinian prosperity and Palestinian sovereignty. Without reverting to massive human dislocation or risking a radical Islamic victory. According to the peace plan, Trump's plan, nobody will get moved. No Israelis and no Palestinians will be moved. So the Palestinian leaders, I think, as a result of Trump's plan, they realize the time is not on their side, something they thought was all the time. The longer they reject peace with Israel, the less independence they might obtain. The Trump plan for Palestinian statehood has an expiry date and a mechanism for dialing back its parameters if the Palestinian leaders don't live up to their basic obligations. This is something that's been needed badly, and now the Trump plan, it's essentially a four-year plan. It also reflects realism. Because the territorial contours and the security parameters of the plan make sense to the vast majority of Israelis. Realistically, the Palestinians won't get a much better deal from Israel under any Israeli government. Those international officials and experts who counsel the Palestinians to reject negotiation based on this initiative are not doing the Palestinians any favor. Now, there are Israeli annexations that the Trump plan allows for. I don't want to go into details, but it includes that Israeli security control over the Jordan Valley and the Jordan River border, and that's really necessary for long-term stability of Israel and for Jordan too, and indeed for any Palestinian state. So the Trump plan, I believe, is really and truly realistic. It's not perfect, but it goes beyond all these endless meanderings of experts over the last 25 and almost 50 years trying to resolve a problem by bringing up all kinds of ideas that make no sense. The nice thing about the Trump plan is it actually makes sense on the ground. And hopefully it will come into being, maybe not in the form it's in now, but along the contours of the form as it is presented now by the American administration. So the plan may not be perfect, but is certainly a realistic basis upon which to build some kind of, if not peace, some kind of armistice here in the Middle East. Real peace may not come in anyone's lifetime, but what we need is an armistice. We need to stop the fighting and give both sides a chance to develop and prosper. I'll be back after the break.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few words about how the attitude of the Trump administration toward Israel may have secondary effects in other countries. Back in 2017, the Palestinians tried to get a move passed at the UN against the decision of the United States to move its embassy to Jerusalem. At that time, the United States was isolated and had to use its veto for the first time in 6 years against a resolution against the move. Now, keep in mind that in the Security Council, the United States has veto power, not so in the UN General Assembly. At that time, America's envoy to the UN, Nikki Haley, called that vote in the Security Council an insult and said it would not be forgotten. Then, when the resolution moved from the Security Council to the UN General Assembly, where the United States does not have a veto power, Nikki Haley said that Washington would be taking the names of those voting for the resolution. Despite the threat, 128 states voted with the Palestinians against the U.S. move of its embassy to Jerusalem. A little over 2 years later, with the international community staring down the barrel of what might be four more years of Trump, and an appetite to go head-to-head with the president was not with them anymore, things changed quite a bit. There are many countries around the world, and especially in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, who don't want to have Trump essentially taking their names and thinking bad about them. One of the countries is Tunisia. Another country, which is not a Middle Eastern country, but one whose attitude toward the Middle East may change because it wants to be closer to President Trump, it's Great Britain, because you now have its foreign policy up until now, that is the British foreign policy, depended a lot on what the European Union was doing. But now the British have jumped out of the European Union. They're now independent. They don't have to follow the decisions of the European Union. Now, when Trump unveiled his plan several weeks ago about the American embassy and about the new the way he would like to see Palestine divided up and so forth, what happened was that a lot of the countries that were typically against such a thing, countries like Saudi Arabia or Egypt or Oman, or the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and even Qatar, when the president came out with his new plan for the dividing up of Palestine, they weren't enthusiastic, but they didn't come out violently against the plan being put forth by the American administration. Now, the only one who really came out against the plan big time was Abbas of the Palestinian Authority, who said, and I quote, 1,000 no's to his plan. So he was endorsed, as he automatically does, by the foreign ministers of the Arab League, who actually pay lip service to the Palestinian cause and are more worried about their own interests, of course. So Abbas decided to go to the bring the plan to the plan to the UN Security Council, and he hoped to isolate the U.S. and Israel, but not all the countries there, and countries outside the body of the UN who have some sway on the inside the council, they don't want to isolate the U.S. only if because they may themselves later need the support of the U.S. So those countries were not willing to sign off on a draft of a resolution the Palestinians circulated, and a vote on even a watered-down resolution was postponed when the Palestinians were not sure they could muster the 9 votes needed to pass a U.S. veto. The failure of the Palestinians to ram a resolution against the Trump plan through the Security Council is not just the latest example of a United Nations that no longer an arena where the Palestinians can expect automatic support. For example, in December, 11 European Union countries plus some Latin American countries voted for the first time against a resolution that had passed every year since 1977, mandating a special division for Palestinian rights inside the UN Secretariat, which was devoted to promoting the Palestinian narrative against Israel. The resolution still passed, but the votes against it were a significant change. 3 months earlier, in September, the Palestinians, trying to join as many UN organizations and protocols as possible, actually failed to get the two-thirds majority needed to gain full admission to the Universal Postal Union, which is headquarters in Switzerland. And in December 2018, 87 UN countries went against the Palestinian desire and voted for a resolution condemning Hamas. The resolution did not pass because a two-thirds majority was needed, but that vote was indicative of changes happening at the UN. This is a little bit under the radar. In other words, there are a lot of countries around the world who are certainly more concerned and of course, more concerned about their relationship with the United States than they are concerned about their relation with the Palestinian cause. So these developments are a strong indication, though the failure of the Palestinians to muster a rejection of the U.S. plan is more than an indication of changing attitudes toward Israel in the United Nations. It reflects a growing realization around the world that President Trump may be reelected and he may be here to stay, at least until 2025. So what's happening is that the actual probability that President Trump will be here for another 4 years has affected the way many countries in the world, and the ones that are most important that I'm considering in this talk are the Arab countries and Muslim countries, who are certainly and reasonably more concerned with their attitude, the attitude of the United States toward them, than they are interested in supporting the Palestinian cause. All this makes sense, and it's something that's, I think you might say, it's a little bit under the radar, because people have been following the relationship of the United States to what's happening here in Israel and with the Palestinians may not be looking further and seeing how this is affecting other countries and how they will relate to Israel and bodies like the United Nations. So the Trump attitude toward Israel has an expanding effect on the manner in which other countries will relate to Israel, primarily because of their fear, if you want to put it that way, or their worry about how the United States will feel toward them if they are anti-Israel. So that's something that's a little bit under the radar, but I think it's of interest and it should be noted. I want to switch gears now and say a few words about, since I mentioned the changing attitude toward Israel, I want to say a few words about another country that's changed its attitude toward Israel. I'm referring to Spain. Spain was once the home to the largest Jewish community in the world, with hundreds of thousands living there and thriving there. The 1492 expulsion presented them with the choice to leave everything behind and leave the country, or convert to Catholicism, putting an end to centuries of flourishing Jewish life. Now, interestingly enough, the rich and really tragic history of the Jews of Spain, which ended in 1492, are going to be presented in a Jewish museum in Madrid, the capital of Spain, which is set to open in 2022. Now, interestingly enough, and I became aware of this, we took a tour of Spain 3 or 4 years ago. Before the Jews were expelled in 1492, they represented between 8% and 10% of the Spanish population. About half decided to stay in 1492, and they converted. Statistically, it is therefore impossible that 25 generations later, anyone would not have some form of Jewish connection. This was told to us by a tour guide in Spain, a Spanish lady. So they're now going to set up a Hispanic Jewish museum in Madrid, which is the only great European capital city that currently does not have a Jewish museum. And I think it's a fantastic thing. So these are two things which may not seem completely related, but there's some a little bit between them. I'll be back after the break.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. In this segment of the program, I want to touch upon a number of small items not related to each other, but which provide color about what's happening in Israel and the Jewish world. The first item has to do with the present plague that the world is suffering from. Hundreds gathered at the Western Wall in Jerusalem on Sunday to pray for those affected by the coronavirus outbreak and to pray that the epidemic be halted. Worshippers recited prayers and psalms, sang and even danced in a circle, asking God to help in the finding of a cure for the disease in a ceremony promoted by the chief rabbi of Safed and president of the Rabbinical Community Association here in Israel, Rabbi Shmuel Eliyahu, in partnership with the Israeli branch of the U.S. Orthodox Union. Only those who have been infected by the virus, but also the millions currently in lockdown and the other challenges China is facing, such as decision by many airlines to cancel their flights to and from China. The head of the Orthodox Union also stressed that the Chinese government is making every effort, including taking very challenging measures, to make sure the virus does not further spread. Now, interestingly, he said the following, which is kind of interesting. We look at our forefathers and see how, when they saw trouble in the world, they prayed to God to take care of it. They prayed for the sick to recover and for the poor to find sustenance. The Chinese people represent 1/6 of the world, and many are affected also in the United States, Europe, and Asia. We should all worry about what is happening and come together to do something about it. During the ceremony, by the way, the organizers expressed the hope that from the center of the world can a cure for coronavirus be speedily found, remembering how Judaism promotes the sanctity of human life. And a long shofar blast concluded the event. Now, among the people present at this ceremony at the Western Wall, which we call the Kotel, a Hebrew word meaning wall, is actually the Kotel Maravi, the Western Wall of the Judaism's holiest site. According to the organizers, several Chinese officials in Israel from the Chinese embassy attended this ceremony. According to the organizers, there was a statement said the following: the Chinese embassy in Israel would like to extend its sincere appreciation for the sympathy, support, and solidarity expressed by the Jewish people. We will never forget it. That's from the Chinese embassy here in Israel. Interesting, here at the holiest place in Judaism, a very large crowd, it was estimated about 10,000 people, gathered to pray for a cure for a sickness that is affecting the entire world. And I think that speaks well of the people who had the sense to organize it. Along the same lines and related to the previous item, a clinical stage Israeli immunotherapy company specializing in drug development for sepsis and organ dysfunction is ready to assist health authorities combating deadly complications caused by this new coronavirus. This company, which is based in Nes Ciona, it's called Enlivix Allocentra. It has a therapy which seeks to treat life-threatening conditions characterized by immune system overreaction, primarily sepsis, through a process of immune system rebalancing. Nearly 270,000 Americans die annually as a result of sepsis, or 1/3 of all the patients who die in American hospitals. According to the executive chairman of this company called Enlivex, E-N-L-I-V-E-X, the company's therapy could potentially assist many severe cases of coronavirus in which the disease causes a potentially fatal overaction of the immune system, leading to organ dysfunction and of subsequent failure. So here we have an Israeli company stepping up to the batter's box to try to beat this new virus, which is really threatening large parts of the world, particularly China. And since we're on the subject of Israeli technology helping to eliminate disease, is another item which also I found fascinating. In August in 2018, an Israeli couple living in the United States brought their two-year-old son to the emergency ward of a hospital for uncontrolled vomiting. Their whole world seemed to shatter when the doctors realized that the problem was caused by a large tumor in the lower part of his brain. A complex procedure known as transnasal endoscopic skull-based surgery, that's a mouthful, essentially aiming to remove the tumor through the nose, had successfully treated similar cases in the past, but had never been performed on such a young child, which presented a whole set of additional challenges. A team at a hospital in Stanford, California, accepted to perform the operation, and Israeli technology came to help. The surgeons had the opportunity to train on a virtual reality platform simulating the surgery, much like fighter pilots would do before a perilous mission. Thanks to an organization called Surgical Theater, an Israeli startup established, interestingly enough, by former Israeli Air Force officers. The surgery lasted 18 hours and returned the boy to a happy and normal life. The next item has nothing to do with the medicine, but it has to do about the human body, and so I want to share it with the listeners. I'll read exactly what it says here in this report. A Palestinian security prisoner was found trying to smuggle 11 cell phones into Megiddo prison in northern Israel last week and was caught by prison guards after they noticed his strange behavior and later detected the presence of foreign items in his body. The guards at the prison ran a magnetometer and took the prisoner for subsequent x-rays at the Haemek Medical Center in Afula, later finding three packages, now get this, three packages in his body, three packages containing 11 cell phones and 15 SIM cards in the prisoner's lower abdomen, according to the Israel Prison Service. The smuggling of contraband items, including cell phones, has been a persistent concern for the Israel Prison Service. In November 2018, Border Police arrested a young Palestinian for attempting to smuggle 8 cell phones, 5 phone keyboards, 19 SIM cards, and a memory card into the Ofer Military Prison, which is just outside Jerusalem. In some cases, smuggling attempts have been sophisticated, including one incident in October 2018 where residents of the central town of Lod were caught using a drone to deliver contraband to Palestinian security prisoners. And that's the news item. And it's interesting how the Palestinians are trying to smuggle contraband into the prisons in very interesting ways, using either drones, which are up way high up in the air, or using their own stomachs, which are where they are. So it's interesting how those trying to smuggle things into the prisons, this has nothing to do with normal criminals. We're talking about smuggling stuff for terrorists in prison, so they're using the high road and the low road. They're using drones, and they're using their own intestines in order to smuggle. So you have to give them credit for trying, and you have to give even more credit to the Israeli Prison Service who have been able to catch them both high and low. And the final item on the agenda this week, which I will report and end with a question. Alpha Farms is a company in Israel that has produced slaughter-free meat. It made waves in the food industry when it announced the successful production of the world's first cell-grown minute steak, grown from cells extracted painlessly from a living cow. Last October, it announced the successful cultivation of meat aboard the International Space Station, 339 kilometers from the Earth's surface. In other words, it is possible now to produce meat from the cells of animals without slaughtering them. My question is, which I leave with the listeners, is this considered meat? And if so, can you eat it with dairy? Until next time, Jay Shapiro signing off.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.home page, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.